was going to talk a little bit about the, I don't have any relationships, commercial ones to talk about. A little bit of the history of migration and how it's been going all over the world, and then a little bit on the U.S.-Mexico border. So people have been migrating from time immemorial from one country to the other. You know, they migrate in search of better opportunities and a better life and more happiness and prosperity and well-being for many different reasons. It's driven by very complex factors: to earn a better living, to have more agreeable environment, to join family, friends. Many are forced to migrate as well. Not everybody migrates for a personal reason. Some are refugees, fleeing from persecution, devastation, or, you know, for being victims of trafficking. So it's a global phenomenon. The world is globalized, and as economic and political crisis and violence and insecurity, climate change and natural disasters, they all are influences on migration. People are increasingly on the move, very mobile, and they also face many, many obstacles, especially to good health. They face discrimination, language, cultural barriers, legal status barriers, and others, no? The other thing that's important to understand is that migration is not just south to north phenomenon. A lot of people think of, you know, everybody coming to the U.S. or to Canada or to Europe, and that isn't so. There are many pathways to migration, and not all of them are to from low and middle income countries to very affluent ones, no? And you have, for example, migration from the United Kingdom to Canada. They're both high-income countries. That's a north-north. Or from high-income to low-middle-income countries, from Portugal to Brazil. And from one low-middle-income country to another, from Indonesia to Malaysia, et cetera. There are many examples of that. More inclusive approach to migration, then, and development is needed to understand the phenomenon. For instance, only 40% of migrants move from south to north. One-third move from south to south, and 20-some percent migrate from north to north. A growing percentage migrate from north to south. Small, but happening. From the U.S. to Guadalajara, Cancun or some place like that, you know. So patterns of migration, there are an estimated 214 million international migrants, 740 million internal migrants, because there's also immigration from rural to urban areas or vice versa, and an unknown number of migrants in an irregular situation all over the world. The latest report that came out in, this year, that was presented at the World Health Assembly, has a lot of this data, and I'll show you a picture of it in a minute. These figures include different migrating populations. There are health workers, there are refugees, there are students, there's undocumented migrants, and many others. And they're all in some way in a vulnerable situation, no? Especially because the health of migrants and the health matters associated with migration are crucial to public health, and they present major challenges to governments and to many NGOs that try to help migrants along the way. And there are gains and losses associated with migration. Not everything is a gain. There are also some losses. The greatest gain associated with migration would be the north-north or the south-north. Migrants in the north generally rate their lives better than the counterparts in their country of origin. Migrants in the south rate their lives as similar or worse than those in the home country. And the south-to-south migrants consider themselves to be worse off than when they, if they had stayed at home. And this is what the World Migration Report looks like. You can get it online. There's two versions, a short executive version and a longer version. Migrants in the south are less likely than the native-born to report satisfied lives. Migrants in the north face many challenges, but they're much less likely than the south to north migrants to be struggling to meet basic needs. Overall, migrants who have moved from one country to another consider themselves to be better off financially compared to the natives or people in their home country. The financial situation of migrants in the north is generally not as good as that of the native born. with 12% of south to north migrants finding it very difficult to get by on the incomes they earn, compared to only 6% of the native-borns that were left, and or the ones in their country. Other challenges besides financials faced by migrants are due to difficulties of obtaining work or obtaining full-time employment. No? Migrants in the north, 26% were unemployed, 13% underemployed, the other way around, 26 and 13, compared to 18 and 8 respectively in their home country, or the native borns in that country. Migrants in the south are less likely than the native borns to feel safe where they live, whereas migrants in the north generally feel safer, as the native-born or residents in the north. And migrants in the south fear high crime rates that prevent them from fully participating in social lives. Perceptions of well-being, migrants who have moved to or between countries in the south are less satisfied than the native-born with their personal health. Migrants moving between two high-income countries report the most satisfaction, and migrants from north to south have more economic stability and purchasing power because they may be retired, and so they have a fixed income, and the southern countries have a lower cost of living. So, but they have fewer social or familiar contacts, so they feel more isolated, and they don't have those networks that they would in their home country. So, focus of migration and policy debate. Migrants from south to north suffer from economic differentials. From south to south report relatively little improvement. And this whole policy debate on migration and health of migration tends to focus on the situation of migrants going to the north, and has not looked at the whole spectrum of migration around the globe. And it's important because migrants in the south who would appear to be most vulnerable and in need of particular attention. And then there's a whole discourse on health workers, physicians, nurses especially, and other health professionals and their migration. It is increasingly highly skilled professionals migrating. In other words, people, say, in the United States feel threatened by lower-wage workers, but those lower-wage workers are usually in doing work that other people wouldn't want to do. The ones who really compete for wages are the highly skilled that come with a profession, such as the health professionals. Medical practitioners and nurses represent a proportion of the high-skilled workers who migrate. The loss of health workers, you know, and human resources in the developing countries obviously will lower the capacity of the health system to deliver health care equitably in the home countries. So there's been all this debate about having an agenda for migrant well-being. Debate is growing. It's gone into WHO and the World Health Assembly this year in May. It talks about integrating migration into development agenda or the Millennium Development Goals and the determinants of health. We heard Michael Marmot yesterday presenting about that. But, you know, it's still kind of up there. It's not readily in the agenda. It remains, those agendas remain on poverty eradication and on bridging the gap in inequities in between countries and within countries, whereas the debate increasingly needs a broader vision of inclusiveness and sustainability and development. Clearly, a need for a much stronger evidence base to understand better the links between migration and development. So a little bit about the U.S. situation. Immigrants in the U.S. workforce are vital to the workforce. Certain industries such as farming, construction, service sector have about 40% of the workers. About 20% of the construction industry powered by foreign labor and the service industry about 21%. This means greater output for the economy. And the biggest winners are the employers, the owners of capital, of land, and the managers, because they are getting more productivity at a very lower cost. Illegal immigrants work almost exclusively in the lowest paid jobs, I was mentioning, least desirable. They don't compete with the American workers. Legal immigrants compete with jobs mostly in the high-skilled professions, right? Taxpayers are already paying for undocumented immigrants' health care and emergency services. This is something that most people are not aware of. The whole discussion is that, you know, this new Affordable Care Act should not have resources for the illegal or the undocumented workers. But when an illegal immigrant receives emergency care, Medicaid can, in certain cases, reimburse the hospital. Somebody's got to reimburse the hospitals when they end up, you know, in emergency, rather than having a more preventive care. Lawmakers struggle to make consensus on the immigration reform, but while health care is central to their disagreement. And mostly it's about the money, about what resources would have to go into this. There is data that, say from Kaiser Permanente, they spent like $30 a year, and they do care for some of the undocumented workers. Whereas if you were, but it's on, you know, on a regular basis, and the data for the emergency room care is more like $300-$400 a year, is way more than if you had a regular care program. It isn't widely known, but taxpayers already do subsidize health care, and so the program doesn't really have a name, but it's referred to as emergency Medicaid, and I think it dates back to Lyndon Johnson's time, if not before, with the war on poverty. So migrants on the border, many deaths have increased, both in the state of Texas and in the Arizona desert. There's lots of data of how many more migrants coming through those deserts are dying in different places. You can see some of them. Tombstones, unknown female, and across. Migrant deaths continue while U.S. Congress continues to push for border security, pouring more public funds into the very enforcement policies of the border patrols that produce these deaths without looking for other solutions, knowing full well the causal relationship between those deaths and the security policies that are being enforced. There are some border experiences. Migrant and rural clinics are attended by more than 130 health workers all over the border and elsewhere in the country, even up in Connecticut and other states. No, many health centers provide valuable information, health and nutrition education, and they organize activities through the community health workers or promotores that work with the communities. And they work with everybody in the community. They don't necessarily go around asking for papers, right? The variety of services of migrant workers include dental, medical clinics, diagnosis. Hidalgo County, for instance, has the highest rate of uninsured in the county, but about one in three people lacking health coverage. Diabetes and other obesity-related diseases are unchecked, and obviously, when they get to a critical stage, they go to the emergency room. So advocating and implementing policies on the border would be important, and looking for more innovative approaches that can address these public health issues, not just the medical care, but also the environmental conditions that could improve some of the health. Many migrants have received vaccinations at the Mexican consulates and at the Ventanillas de Salud, as well as AIDS tests and other services. Mostly it's an educational service that they have at these consulates. But this particular report that I read was of the consulate in El Paso that also goes into New Mexico and provides these types of services. And then some of the components of good migrant health practices, and this was of 16 countries, including a couple in Europe and some in Central America, Costa Rica, and what have you, Brazil. The experiences in healthcare for migrant populations in these countries providing primary health care, accident and emergency care, and community mental health services. So healthcare professionals experienced similar difficulties when providing care to migrants. They also have relatively consistent views on what constitutes good practice, and these are some of it. Sufficient resources, which most of them don't have, organizational flexibility, in other words, not only just sitting in the clinic and waiting, but having community health workers and other staff that goes out. Positive attitude, training for staff, obviously language and cultural issues in providing information were critical to them. So that's kind of a little bit what I have. It looks like we're all talking to the converted. So thank you so much.